Hey there. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I'm Judy Nathan.
And today is February 16th, 2021.
Yes.
All right. You know, I still think sometimes like, wait, geez, are we actually going to make it to the millennium? Well, that's 21 years ago. All right.
Oh, God. Since 2000, I don't know where I've been. You know, we had 9/11 happen. Bush got in, and I think everything went downhill. Even with the old blip of Obama, I'm sorry.
I know.
Republicans have been
gone by in a flash.
Right. Yeah.
So we had some rather interesting things over the last couple of weeks at the national level. Not that we want to obsess about that on you know, the United States Inside Out here. But you know, we actually finally got to the second impeachment trial.
I know.
You know, I don't mind admitting that I didn't watch any of the impeachment trial at all.
I watched a fair bit of it.
I only managed to snap on the TV because I heard it was actually coming to the vote.
That was Saturday.
Yeah. So I turned on the TV and then watched the vote. And again, no surprises there.
Right. Well, one extra Republican, maybe. Seven, right?
It was 57-43. You know, but that, again, no surprises. It's exactly what the expected outcome was. It's the outcome that everybody knew more or less was going to happen weeks and weeks ago.
Right.
Which kind of makes you wonder what the point is. But I think there was a
point. Was to, hey, this happened and let's not forget it.
You can't just sweep it under the rug, even if you know that the impeachment's not going to prevail.
This behavior is egregious.
Yeah.
On all accounts.
But I have to say, after the vote was taken and they did this whole big line of speeches, one after another. I thought Chuck Schumer was great, but I actually kind of also saw the point that McConnell was making as well.
Oh, yeah. Except he did not want to have the impeachment hearing while Trump was still in office. And then he goes to say, well, you can't.
I know that
try. That was a little bit, you know.
That was kind of the lie. But you know.
But from the beginning, he's been, not the beginning, but since.
Yeah, but I think I do kind of warmed up to the notion that the purpose of impeachment is basically to derail an out of control president, you know, as sort of a safety measure.
Right.
So in that regard, this impeachment wasn't so much a safety measure so much as it was a...
Yeah, but how did it derail him? The only way it would derail him is if he couldn't run for office again.
Right, and that's true. And I think a lot of people emphasize that point, that if they were to actually convict him, that they could then do that subsequently.
Well, that was part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, but you know, I voted for Joe Biden for many reasons, not the least of which is I didn't want to hear Donald Trump's name anymore.
I know.
So I have to say
he had to hear it for 2 weeks more. Yeah.
And we keep hearing it, you know.
And we will, because it's the party of Trump. For anybody to say differently, I'm sorry.
I think it is
right now.
You know, I have witnessed more than a few obituaries to political parties of the years.
Yeah. Okay.
And then they just come back, repurpose themselves a little bit. Public opinion has changed pretty rapidly sometimes. Remember, most Republicans hated Trump in 2016 before he became the nominee.
Yeah, well, then 74 million people voted for him.
I know.
And 60% of those still think the election
I know.
Stolen.
And those fickle people in 2 years may very well say Trump. Oh yeah, him.
Wait, 60% of Republicans? That's a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not convinced that the polls of today are necessarily indicative.
Polls, schmoles, as they say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the bottom line, you know, Trump notwithstanding, is that we are in a period now of redefinition of the major political parties in this country.
Of so much.
Right. Yeah. The Democratic Party is having their own internal struggle. It doesn't.
Oh, yeah. I'm not. I mean, I don't like a lot about the Democratic establishment. I mean, just the whole progressive move wing and this and that.
So, you know, will one side win out? Sure. Will they find some sort of compromise? Will they sort of absorb in and find some unanimity? I don't know.
Right.
You know, I think that the Trumpism will work itself out to some degree. One thing I really don't want to see, but I imagine we will see, is that, you know, that big kitty of money that Trump and his people raised.
$200 million.
He'll probably start like a whole news network of, you know, Trump Inc. Cable channel or some other.
I don't think he can do that with that money. I thought that's campaign related.
No.
No. Oh, that pack can do anything.
Some could, some could. Okay. So the part, which is like
right.
$250 million, basically can fund.
Really?
Yeah. They could actually set themselves up as a daily internet presence that Trump people just tune into every day. And, you know, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, I heard he's going to support a lot of primary challenges.
Right. So he's going to basically. That. Yeah. He's going to do all of that, and mm-hmm. And he's going to set himself up as the anti-president, and that's going to be.
Thought it was the Antichrist or something.
No. And then and there are a lot of like supporters will just tune in to hear.
Oh, God.
The word of our Lord and Master every day.
I know.
Just stop covering him in the regular news.
So. All right, we'll go on from that. But I want to ask, what do you think about the commission that was just appointed? Like the 9/11 Pelosi.
This is to look in some of what actually happened at the Capitol. They have to do it.
I hope they really focus on how did this happen. I know all about the crazies and all that. I want to know, where was the security? Where, with all the knowledge they knew about this group coming with guns, people knew it everywhere. Talk about the internet. How come this? That's what they really need to look at.
I think they mismeasured the seriousness of it to some degree.
Totally not seen.
Right. But,
Why? They didn't communicate, just like in 9/11. They did not communicate. CIA didn't talk to FBI, all the chatter.
The biggest charge against Trump that I completely bought on and I would have convicted him if I was in that position had to do with the fact of dereliction of duty of what is your oath of office say.
Oh my God,
And if you're the president of the United States,
you defend the Constitution.
If there's an armed mob attacking the Capitol, you have control of all these parts of government that can rush to intervene. And he failed to do so.
Well, after the fact or before?
During.
That's where I think they got a couple of those Republicans on their side
because
of what it was, and so obvious that he could care less about what happened to people.
Right.
Unbelievable.
I mean, exactly. Unbelievable. So, that to me was, automatic conviction in my book, but hey.
Right. Okay. So, let's just leave that guy in the past.
I want to do that. I really do. I want to move on. There's going to be a baseball season. I hear right now the schedule is calling for 154 games.
What do you think about what's going on with the Red Sox? They're getting rid of all the favorite players. Andrew Benintendi.
Andrew Benintendi is gone. Yeah. And,
And Jackie, is he also on the chopping block?
I hope not. But Jackie Bradley?
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is that there have been years in recent years where I've tuned into the Red Sox at the beginning of the year and didn't actually know who was on the team, really, other than a few names. And that was okay by me because I just like watching the baseball games.
Oh, you're sweet.
I'm just looking forward to having a real season.
An almost complete, yeah.
Well, that's actually interesting. It's 154 games, which is what the schedule used to be.
I thought it was 180. Expansion.
No, it went to 162, became the standard during the, after the expansion, I think in 1961 or 62.
Okay. Yeah.
And, or somewhere, it actually might've been sooner because
the
I know that was-
were part of the expansion.
Well, it actually could have been earlier. I know that it must've been later because it must've been earlier because the asterisk on Roger Maris's 61 home runs per year record was because he did it in a 162 game season.
Right.
And Babe Ruth did it in a 154 game
season.
That's right. So it was, sometime before 1961. It could have happened in 61.
But anyway, that to me
is my source of optimism. I am looking for warmer weather, less COVID, and baseball. And that will make my life just dandy.
You're in the same group as me now to get the vaccine next, right?
Getting there, really. And by the way, it's worth noting, and again, I don't mean to obsess so much on this here, but it is worth noting, and I'm just going to kind of rush to this right here.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That in fact, for those who've been anxious about COVID, the numbers really are objectively getting better. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that the number of new infections is flattening yet, but it is definitely getting less steep.
That across the country too. It's not just
It's demonstrably true, and
look at that.
the peaks of the happened ever since I guess November, December.
Yeah.
Have been trailing off pretty rapidly. I don't think they're just going to go away right away, but but certainly that horrible period seems to have come to an end, and hopefully it will come back with other variants.
But did you hear they just seven variants now they found it? But I guess that conversion, I heard something, conversion evolution. I don't know, I heard some term this early this morning. I have to figure it out, but
yeah,
hopefully we can weather it.
Right. And you know, at least we can speak in for our little hometown Moderna folks. Yeah, they actually have technology where they can actually modify.
I think Pfizer does too.
Pretty quickly.
I think Pfizer does too.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to be, I'm choosing to be optimistic about it to be sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so things are getting arguably better. We'll see.
Except, I'll see them better when the kids go back to school.
Right. And I'm still a fan of actually getting as many teachers and staff vaccinated as quickly as possible, just so everybody can put their minds.
They're behind us.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard. You know, I have upstairs tenants. One person's got the vaccine now. Another person had to be quarantined because of air contact with somebody, but has now tested negative, you know. But, you know, it's the scary thing is how this thing seems to always continue lurking around the edges of our lives. And it is sort of like, you know, walking out into a scary street where somebody's still waiting behind us at a building for you.
I now double mask.
Doing that, but you know,
you have an N95. I mean, do you wear a KN or?
I don't. But I just stay away from people.
Well, yeah, I do. I do too. I mean, I go shopping, but I have a mask now. I went to the dentist today. That's the second time, but I had to. But they've been vaccinated, so phew, that's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's getting more and more. I think the president's promise of 100,000 vaccinations in 100 days, it looks like he's actually going to meet it and exceed it. So that's actually pretty good news.
100 million, I thought.
100. That's what I meant. 100 million.
I don't know.
Not 100 million in 100 days. That wasn't it. But it was. I don't think so. No, but they are getting
100 million. That would be a third of the country.
Yeah. But they're making pretty good progress, which is not the same as
that
Massachusetts is doing well. I think Massachusetts is, this may sound kind of contradictory.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that if they worried a little bit less about fairness and equity, what people won't like to hear, but, and about just speed and efficacy, getting it out there, then they would have been able to actually deal with the fairness and equity issue better.
I've heard that somebody just wrote that
the way they're doing it now.
I know, you know, with all these phases.
Sometimes just you know, kick out the jams, let her rip, get as much out there as fast as you can. Worry about fairness a little bit later. You know, it's not like you're discarding fairness, but you know, speed matters in a situation like this. And I think that's really what they should be focusing on primarily.
You're right.
So. So one of the things I don't know if this is, maybe this is the time to mention, but I think one of the things that I did this weekend, you know, my little quarantine exercises, I got to thinking for no particular reason about a piece of zoning that's been proposed.
Missing middle
petition, which M&M. Is, by the way, distinct from a conversation that they're having without actual zoning text tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow afternoon or something with.
Is that the neighborhood planning?
Long-term planning committee.
Oh, right. Having
to do with loosening restrictions on single-family zoning.
Right.
And you know, just basically some restrictions in some of the more restrictive zones of the city, which I think is a good idea. I actually proposed it during the Envision process. What exactly should be proposed? Well, we could talk about that, but. You know, but that's distinct from this other thing called the missing middle housing petition that was introduced by the ABC people.
Right.
So I got to thinking about that, not strictly as a statement of opposition, but because I got to thinking that, you know, a lot of times when something is proposed that's in the abstract, you know, just sort of saying, well, we've decided that, you know, because of and then blah, 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 some somewhat fallacious arguments to in favor of this. That it got me thinking that, you know, I don't know that city councils or a lot of residents, for that matter, actually understand what would happen or potentially would happen.
Residents don't understand zoning.
They don't understand zoning. Yeah. You know, so you hit them with sort of an emotional appeal, say, this will, don't you worry, this is going to be great for the middle class, even though there's zero in the petition that specifically would necessarily benefit anybody who identifies as middle class.
Right.
You know, but the thing is, it's a sales pitch. So I got to thinking about it very naively. I thought to myself, well, okay, never mind the whole city. Let me just think block by block of a few blocks around my neighborhood. What would the change be? You know? Yeah. So, you know, some of the streets that are adjacent to me are Antrim Street, you know, Fayette Street, Maple Avenue, Lee Street, Inman Street, things New like Cambridge. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I did is I downloaded the assessor's database and
the whole database,
the entire database.
Well, how can you do that? You must
have you go to Open Data Portal and you can get it.
How fast, what kind of download speed do you have?
Oh, it's not that bad.
No?
No. But the thing is that the problem is that though I suppose I could have gone to the building department and requested it be sort of aggregated. The problem was is that since the condominium craze has happened over the last 20, well, really 30 or more years.
Yeah.
You know, what happens is that it used to be that the living area was tied directly to the lot area, so you could calculate the floor area ratio pretty easily. And then whenever a building gets condoed, then the land area stays with that record.
Right.
And then
right.
separate condo records are generated
that
show the individual living areas for each individual condo.
Okay.
So in order to actually get sort of the aggregate total living area for a building, you have to put it all back together again. So there I was kind of bleary-eyed,
using my math skills
and obsessive compulsive tendencies to basically spend all day Saturday just reassembling. Not for every, the only way to do it practically was to do it for specific streets. So that's what I set out to do. So I started out saying, okay, I'm going to do Norfolk Street, Antrim Street, and one other. I forget which one.
Why? Norfolk is not mid-Cambridge. It's more.
No, it wasn't. Just popped into my head.
Popped into your head. Okay. Yeah.
And I said, well, let me try. I think it was because it was more like Area 4 or the Port area as opposed to mid-Cambridge where I live,
right.
So I said, well, let me just do a few streets. So I started doing that. And eventually I started to get good at it. And then by yesterday, I cranked out about 28 or 30 streets. And, you know, and actually became pretty confident in the results as I was doing it too. And then just put it all together and made a document out of it to kind of make a point.
It's on your website. Are you going to show a little bit of it?
Yeah, we could show a little bit of it here right now. I mean, there's, I have it in a few places here.
Right.
So what I did was, I put a little bit of a narrative together about it. You know, actually relating it to, you know, because in a way, my mindset about it was very similar to something that happened a few years ago when there was people discussing Central Square. So I put together this little piece called "Completing the Square," which was just sort of an actual walk through Central Square with a camera, where I just pointed out simple observations about. You know, places that I thought were kind of missing pieces.
Significant
buildings had once stood and now they're just little one story, little throwaways and whatever.
Taxes, right?
Yeah, they call them taxpayers. Yeah. And, but there are some real handsome buildings in Central Square, but there were a lot of missing teeth. So I put together this kind of little photo book about it, you know, sort of showing and pointing out just pretty simple-minded things about what I think could be improved, you know, and it was a little bit, you know, meant to be kind of naive, but informed at the same time.
And when did you do this? This
was actually in 2013, about 7 years ago. And since then, you know, some of these places that were kind of empty, like right around here, is now where Mass and Main is located. You know,
and also the hotels.
And hotels. So some things have changed, you know, and you know, I think most of anything good is still there. Anything bad is kind of getting better, I think.
Target went into the court.
Yeah, but I still think that's a building that really could be more.
Right there. Oh, yeah. Well, also the one to the right there. that you have right next to that one.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of buildings there that, that I think just are, they really could just be more interesting and more vital. And I think in time, I suppose they will, right? But but I just wanted to do that. So anyway, what I was doing, I said, I'm going to do something similar. I'm just going to basically virtually take a walk down some streets, calculate what the existing densities are in each of these various streets. Just to kind of get a sense of things.
You have Bell's Circle. I know someone.
Yeah, you know, you can see there's a bit of an alphabetical bias. I was going through it alphabetically. I wasn't planning to do the alphabet at all. So it's kind of lumped toward the front of it. But you know, if you have a petition that's proposing to have a residential density pretty much across the board for what were previously the A's, B's and C1 districts, residential districts. Yeah. They wanted to propose a residential density of 1.25. And I think last time we met, we had the show, I was talking about my houses around that. And I would say that's a little too dense.
Exactly. So, a lot of non-conforming buildings, right.
But I hadn't actually done the calculation. So I said, well, let me actually just walk virtually down some of these streets and sort of see what they are. So, so a street like Amory Street, just sort of moderate density. It's like, it's at 0.89 is what the built environment is. Appleton Street in West Cambridge, on the other hand, which is Residence B, is about a 0.53, which is just only slightly above what's actually permitted legally. You know, and I just sort of did it all around. And I compared to like Berkshire Street in Wellington Harrington, actually already has a built FAR averages out to about 1.22, which is actually very close to what's proposed. But you know, the thing is that if people want to understand what the impact of a change like this is, I think, don't think of it in the abstract, just think of it by specific streets.
So,
probably the prize winner on this list was Lakeview Avenue.
I see that 190.
Which I think right now that you could you could build up to 0.5 or something, I think now. But by this, you could triple the density.
That'll never happen, ever.
Well, I think the zoning changes do not result in absolute changes overnight. But the thing is that, every time a parcel changes hands, you would expect people to build pretty much to whatever the maximum they can build is.
Right.
And also homeowners, existing homeowners could say, what? Oh, you mean I could build,
I can build
three times the building here? Boy, and now it's time for the indoor pool and the additions.
Well, bring our in-laws in. I want them.
Bring the indoors. You know, and so, you know.
I guess that is the middle class. I mean, you could argue that that's what they're saying, but.
Well, I don't really see the connection to middle class because I think as long as the hot market still in Cambridge, the principal beneficiaries would still be the people
the upper,
who are willing to dig deep. Yeah. And new buildings are not cheap buildings anyway. So, not to belabor the point, but the thing is that I thought it might be helpful to quantify some of what's actually being proposed rather than turning it all into sort of
you like got much response. I know you put that on Twitter or Facebook. I forget. Have you got any more?
So I just put that up there just today in the middle of the day. I'm sure I'll get some response in time.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a funny thing about getting internet responses is if you say something inflammatory, you're liable to get like instant responses. If you say something reasonably intelligent, people go, how am I going to respond to this? And so you don't necessarily expect to get instant responses.
I don't think Facebook is the first place people go to anymore. They'll go to Twitter and the younger people go.
Well, it's there too. But the thing is, it all depends on which people are reading.
Well, that's true.
So anyway, I'm sure I'll get some kind of response. And it wasn't meant to be a hostile act to put it out there. It's just that I think that, you know, trying to argue for making zoning changes based on kind of thin statements and abstraction as opposed to, you know, there's sort of the actual existing built environment is still a better way to go.
Yeah. Now, where is that petition at this point? What's happening?
It's referred to the Ordinance Committee and Planning Board for hearing and report. And
that hasn't been scheduled yet.
They haven't scheduled it yet, no. But, you know, I was noticing a few days ago that even the language of it, the terminology, the missing middle petition, identical from one out from the West Coast. So it's sort of like, yet another illustration about how sort of national politics is basically using Cambridge as a bit of a sandbox these days for playing it out, whether it's a match or not. You know, I will absolutely stick by my point of view here, which is that if you want to argue against single family zoning in a town that has virtually all single family zoning, or in a town, or arguing in favor of increasing density in a town that has abysmally low density.
Right. Go for it.
No argument from me.
Right.
But Cambridge nationally is actually one of the densest cities in the country.
I know.
Already.
I know.
Yeah. You know, so this, it's not
a ridiculous argument.
It is a pretty ridiculous argument, but the thing is that, you know, and again, I don't want to be too mean-spirited about this, but I don't know that our elected city councilors are all that expert at quantifying things, understanding.
A couple of them are. Somebody that's built things actually knows.
Well, Dennis Carlone, I think, will understand very well.
But, yeah. You know, it's the one thing I do like about his being on the council.
No, that is his, yeah. I think, one of his prime skills that you really can be used.
Badly needed with all these petitions coming out every other week.
Right. You know, but it can so easily be swamped by ideology.
Right.
You know, and emotion as opposed to, you know, just sort of quantification and reality.
Right.
You know, so anyway, I'm at least wanting to get the ball rolling in that direction, if at all possible.
Yeah. You know, there was a petition. There was an ordinance committee meeting today, I guess. I didn't realize that. I didn't really.
They added an extra one about the alewife.
That's what it is today. Yeah, at 1 o'clock. So.
And there's like organized opposition to it. I have no opinion on that one, by the way. And you know, in that particular area, in
the quadrangle, or is it the quadrangle?
Yeah, which is not the quad. Quad is like on a campus. It's the quadrangle.
I know.
But you know, listen. I think they ought to play hardball and say you either build the bridge or you ain't getting nothing.
Yeah.
And find a way to make that reality. And I'm perfectly okay with it.
I'm going to try to tune into it at some point. So we have like a half a minute left.
Yeah. So that was that, and you know, and they got a whole sequence of other ordinance committees. We'll talk about that, I guess, in the half hour, including a real estate transfer fee and
I don't know anything about that. That's
in March. It's coming up in March. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it'll be some interesting things happening in the weeks to come. So,
okay. All right. So
anyway, we'll take a 3-minute break and we'll be back on Cambridge Inside Out.